Warning, the Stone Age Gamer includes a lot of bad language. Cover your motherfucking ears.
Good evening and welcome to episode 230 of the Stone Age Gamer Podcast for the week of November 30th, 2018. That's $230 worth of pudding.
That's a lot of pudding.
Don't you worry your pretty little head about it. Ain't your concern. I am Chris Randazzo, and with me tonight is Barry and LeVon reference Dan Ryan. Oh boy. With the end of November in our sights, we have come upon the 10-20-30 once again to discuss games from November 2008, 1998, and 1988. But before we go any further, here's your weekly reminder that you can email us at mail@geekade.com. Just include the word Stone Age Gamer in the subject line, and you can let us know what you think of our show, what topics you would like us to discuss in the future, or just say hello, because we always want to hear from you, the listener. And if you don't know what we're talking about, just Google Barry and LeVon. Enjoy.
So funny.
How you doing, Dan?
I'm pretty good, Chris. I'm thinking that we probably at some point need to start that whole Patreon thing so we can give our patrons the unedited version of the show. Because, like, you know, we'll get your money once and maybe twice. Then after that, you'd be like, wow, these guys are... Whew, boy. But,
These guys suck at hokey pokey. What a bunch of assholes.
What a bunch. Captain Monterey Jack. Anyway, I'm good, man. So had a couple days off of work. Finished Spider-Man. Finally. Excellent. I am very excited to jump into the DLC. I'm probably going to wait a little bit and like make sure that's not the right word. Let all of it come out first.
Yeah, didn't the second one set up an eventual conclusion for this DLC or something?
Yeah. So like there, because it's a Marvel property, there's a post-credit sequence,
of course,
in the game, and it's awesome. And then it jumps right into like when you get the DLC, the first the heist, I think it's called. It jumps right into the story, like right after that happens. So what's really cool about it is that it is assuming, even though you don't have to, but it is assuming that you have finished the main game before you jump into the DLC and the extra stuff that's there. So it kind of pushes forward with the story, which is kind of awesome. You know, like they're not saving that stuff for, I mean, not all of it anyway. They're not saving all of it for the eventual sequel. To this really, really excellent game. And goddamn, the last 45 minutes or so of this game are just so good. They're so good and so tense. And the acting was so well done. And the final fighting sequences that are in there are amazing. They're just out of control good. It is a really, really hard choice. Like Tiff and I were talking about it earlier today about like, you know, with the annual award show coming up here, God of War or Spider-Man, like it's really a 1 and a 1A, you know. But
yeah, that's going to be a really interesting episode, not just because the two of us haven't played most of the games that the other has played.
Yeah.
But Dean's going to be on, so who the fuck knows what's going to happen there.
Right. Dean will probably pick Portal 2 for Tiff. Game of the Year Portal 2. Still nothing better. I defy you.
Hasn't been topped. Hasn't been ported. Put Portal 2 on everything.
Right? Why is Portal 2 not on every goddamn system?
Portal 1 and 2 needs to be on all current generation systems forever.
And then Portal 3.
And then Portal 3. 7. Yes. Please.
So, finished Spider-Man, and then I was like, you know what? I bought Hollow Knight. It was $7.50 on sale for the PlayStation Black Friday sale. I'm going to go ahead and pick this up. So this is an indie Metroidvania style game. I'll just jump in to see what this is all about. And I am now obsessed with Hollow Knight. It is so fucking good. And I know it's a game that technically came out last year on PC, but this year for consoles.
Yeah, and there's a lot of that stuff I'm considering in Game of the Year category. Same with we're doing a Waveback Awards this year, right, too. And basically, if its first major console release was this year, is how we're drawing mm-hmm. the lines on a lot of this stuff. So I'm with you there. As far as I'm concerned, it counts as a 2018 release.
But I mean, this game is it's incredible. It is so well done. I am blown away by how great this game is. It is, to me anyway, it is very reminiscent of how Metroidvania style games used to be, where there were areas that if you went into that area, you were going to die if you weren't ready. Right. And games have gotten a lot easier as time has gone on. But like, if you go back to Symphony of the Night and Super Metroid and stuff like that, there were just certain parts of that, those games that you just could not go to yet. Right.
Yeah. Like, if you don't have the spike breaker and you think, I got enough health, I got enough health, I can make it through there. No, you can't. You're dead.
Nope. You're dead.
But
it was always fun to try. And the game, like, and that's how Hollow Knight is. It is a tough game. Like, I don't think I died more than like once or twice in Guacamelee 2 in the entire playthrough. And it wasn't even really because something was hard. It was just like I was just fucking around and ended up, you know, like, oh shit, whatever. I've died a lot in a Hollow Knight because it's tough. The cool thing about it though is because there are like purchasable upgrades mm-hmm. in the game, which is where I do have like one minor complaint with it. But because there are purchasable upgrades, when you die, your soul exits your body, right? And stays there with all of your money. So you
kinda
can
like
go
Shovel Knight.
Yes, like Shovel Knight. So you can go back to get your money. But the shitty part about that is that chances are the place that you died in is not a place you fucking should have been anyway.
Yeah.
So you'd have to
brave that in order to.
Yeah, there's a real risk reward factor of like, all right, I had like 1,000 geo on that. I have to go get it because I can't do this next thing and I don't want to grind. There is a really nice little bit that they have though, where there's a character you can unlock. There's just a ton of really like cool characters in the game, but there's a character called Gigi that you can unlock. And if you feed him or her, it's a bug. I don't think it really matters. But if you give them a rancid egg in exchange, that she will pull your soul from wherever it is on the map so that you can like kill it and get all your stuff back. The only problem with that is that rancid eggs are a limited resource. There's not a place to go farm them. So you really have to use them wisely. It's amazing. It is absolutely gorgeous to look at. The music is absolutely stellar. I love everything about this game.
I can definitely back you up on the music there. I haven't played this game at all. It's been on my list for a while. I missed it on sale once or twice, and it's just been one of those things that I've been waiting to to pick up when it goes on sale, just because my backlog is so considerable.
Yeah,
at the time, but because of doing the Waveback Awards, I've listened to pretty much the soundtrack to pretty much every major release this year,
mm-hmm.
Which is unreasonable the amount of music
I really
listen to. And I'm not making all the judges listen to all of it. I've kind of pared it down, but anyway, this soundtrack really really impressed me. Because there was something about this game that was kind of rubbing me the wrong way from just looking at it. Mm-hmm. I liked a lot of the ideas of it, but it was I don't know, just something about it wasn't really connecting with me 100%, which is why I was waiting for it to go on sale. I'm also fairly certain that once I play it, I will really fall for it.
Yeah.
I had already played several games like that this year, and so I kind of leaned a little bit more towards I wanted to try a few more different things, which is how I came across stuff like, you know, Just Shapes and Beats and Yoku's Island Express, these very different kind of games that have sent me in a just over the moon and as far as joy is concerned. And I also have Monster Boy coming up in like a week, and that's kind of like the one of the biggest things I'm looking forward to this year. So
yeah, I'm buying it Friday.
Yeah, I have my my physical day one edition reserved at Best Buy, so I'm super excited to go pick that up on Tuesday. And oh boy.
Yeah, well, and like, we have to support Banjo Guy Otter.
We do, because he's in the game as an otter with a banjo.
Yeah, that gets my $10.
Absolutely,
without question.
I'm so sold on that game. I'm so excited. But,
yeah, really excited for that too. The problem is that I won't be finished with Hollow Knight before that comes out. But I do want to make sure that I play this before we do the award show, because you know this is kind of a big release that's coming. You know, certainly for people like us, but to have a new game in like a new official game in the Wonder Boy, Monster Boy, Astro Boy, fucking
Monster World,
Monster World,
heck.
All like this is a new spoke to the wheel. That's kind of a big deal.
Yeah, it's really quite impressive, and everything I've seen on it looks amazing. I've loved watching it grow over the years. It's just been an absolute blast to watch. So I'm super excited about that game. But you know, back to your point on Hollow Knight, it's something I was really hoping to get to play before the end of the year, but I've simply run out of time. I've never had anything in the way of downtime this year as far as games are concerned. I've never really been in a position where I'm like, well, I don't really have anything that I need to be playing right now. I have a backlog of games that have come out this year that I really want to be playing, and a secondary backlog of games that I haven't even bought that I want to be playing. And Hollow Knight and Dead Cells are kind of the top of the list there. I really wanted to play both of those games and just haven't because of lack of time and money, I guess.
Yeah, I mean, I know, like, as we were messaging back and forth earlier, like earlier today before the show, but I really feel as strongly for Hollow Knight as I did for AM2R and for Axiom Verge that this is like the next great, like this is the next big deal as far as Metroidvanias are concerned. And like, I saw somebody online like had said that Hollow Knight is better than Axiom Verge, it's better than Symphony of the Night, it's the best Metroidvania that has ever been made. And I don't know if I'm there yet, but
yeah,
game is so good that I could see it getting to that
point. I've heard lots of opposing opinions on that, because I've heard lots of folks be where you are, where it's just like, this is just outstanding, this is one of the best things I've ever played. But I've also heard the opposite end of the spectrum, like, of this is does a lot of good things on paper, but it has a lot of problems, and I'm not in love with it. So
I would imagine, completely not knowing where those sources are from, I would imagine that those are people that did not grow up playing games the way we did and do not appreciate the challenge that is inherent in there. Because there are parts of it where it's like, well, that was just fucking mean. And that sucked. And like, there's certain parts of the games or of the game where like, if you go down a path, you know, there's like instant death spikes not instant death, but it takes away a life piece and it sends you back up to the beginning of like the little area that you're in if you hit certain things. And if you go down there and you go exploring and wandering like way off the map before you technically should, and you don't really know whether or not you should at that point. It's kind of the fun of these games and kind of the point of it.
Yeah.
But if you need to get back out of there, there is some challenging platform stuff that you have to do to get back up. It's not impossible, but it is hard. And it's hard the way older games were hard. And I like that.
It definitely seems like something that I will also enjoy.
Just gotta get
to it. But it's also got some pretty steep competition, especially in the specific Metroidvania category. You know, when we're talking about, you know, Celeste isn't a Metroidvania. Celeste is kind of a different animal. But of that flavor that I've played this year, probably the two that stick out in my mind the highest are Dandara and The Messenger.
Yeah.
And The Messenger in particular is a game that I fell for quite hard because it just does so many interesting things. It does seem like it's a very different kind of experience than Hollow Knight. But Dandara was really, really extraordinary. And I don't think that game's gotten the attention that it deserves this year. It definitely hasn't. In a similar situation to Hollow Knight, in that it's hard, and it is very easy to veer off the beaten path, you know, and when exploring and come into a room where you're just not supposed to be, and you're just gonna die. But Dandara also had such an interesting play hook with the way that you actually traverse in that game. I mean, I remember talking a lot about it way earlier in the year, and you know. Well, this is definitely a conversation for game of the year kind of stuff, I guess. Mm-hmm. So, did you have any other games you played you want to talk about before I take my turn?
No, that's really all I've been getting at. I mean, apart from, you know, Puzzle and Dragons, I am really, really upset with how poorly I am doing at this current ranking dungeon. Hmm. It's making me very, very angry because it's just a play style I'm not used to. Like the last ranking dungeon, I did fine and got the rewards and all of that stuff. But this one, I am fucking angry. I've got time, though, Chris. There's still time.
I believe in you.
You probably should, but, I mean, I appreciate it.
Well, I did a little Black Friday shopping myself.
Mm-hmm.
I went to GameStop, which I loathe. Mm-hmm. But I went there because they were giving out free Xbox 360s.
Were they?
Technically, you go in there and you buy an Xbox 360, and then you get a mail-in rebate for the cost of the Xbox 360.
That's weird.
So my rebate's on the way. It comes in the form of a Visa gift card, which I will use to pay my credit card bill, which is what I put it on.
So, how much was it?
I think it was like $69 or something.
That's really weird.
Yeah.
They just had too many?
I guess. I don't know. I mean, I needed a new 360 anyway. I was still rocking the old white one. And last time I went to go play Portal, as a matter of fact, it was making some really unpleasant noises. it was doing a lot of disk read errors, a lot of, you know, not being able to open the drive. It'd be like,
maybe not.
Not right. Play some Geometry Wars. Give me a break.
Stop making me spin shit.
I got to figure out how to get all my information off my old 360 onto this new one, but it's a pretty black one. It's the newer, smaller ones, and so now all the systems on my shelf are black, and that's
very very cool.
I also went out to Best Buy because they had Starlink on sale for $35, and that's cool stuff, man.
Is it worth it?
It's worth $35.
Okay, fair enough.
Like I haven't played enough of the game to say for sure whether or not that was worth it. I'm a big Star Fox fan, as you know, so
sure.
Really just getting that R-Wing was super cool. Like it is a really cool model R-Wing, and it comes with a little mini Fox McCloud figure because the figures. I played the game once with the figures with my son, which he just thought that was the coolest thing in the world. Like snapping the wings off and putting different things on and repositioning the guns, and that all just it's all done in real time in the game, like super quick. But you also do that with your pilots. And what was cool is like you put the pilot on the controller, and then you put the ship over them, and then you can actually see the pilot in the cockpit. Pretty awesome.
That's very cool.
It's just a neat little toy thing. But the game itself, the production values are really nice. Like it's a really, really good-looking game. Now, obviously, I got the Switch version because I'm playing the Star Fox stuff, and it's like, it's not really tacked on. It's really in the story. Like, you can tell how it was incorporated into the story, how, like, they could take it out and the story still works. But in the Switch version, it's just like, and then the Star Fox team shows up, and they're just in the game, like, part of the cinematics, even if you're not playing as Fox, they're part of the whole thing. So that's kind of neat how really intertwined that is with the game itself. So for that, I would definitely say if you're even remotely interested, you got to get the Switch version, just because it's more content for the same amount of money. But the, you know, the game itself was pretty fun. It's not anything like a Star Fox game, which is weird. It's very your ship doesn't do a lot of like free flying so much as it does a lot of hovering. it's like you're in a hovercraft most of the time. Like you have like a jump button. So your ship like flies a few feet off the ground the whole time. And you know, you can strafe and do all that kind of stuff. And I wasn't really getting the hang of the weaponry at first. Because they're like, it kind of, you scan things to find out what their weaknesses are, and then you like snap off that gun and put on a different gun. And
right,
it only comes with two of the physical guns, but it also comes with a handful of digital guns, which I didn't even really realize until I wanted to check and see how the game plays without all the toys, because I really just wanted to leave that Star Fox, the R-Wing, at work with all my amiibos and stuff and play the game with the controller whenever I get around to it.
Right.
And then once I did that, you can just go into this menu and equip all the different guns, all like a bunch of different guns. It's like, oh, well, this would have been cool a little while ago. Oops.
This would have been good to know.
Would have been useful before I spent like a half an hour on this one boss, like just slowly chipping away at it. Like, all right, well, I got the pattern down, so I'm just going to keep on shooting it till it's dead. And it took me a while, but it was still fun. It's a neat game. It really is. I don't know if the $75 price tag was worth it. I think that whole thing was pretty expensive. It is. And like, I get it. It comes with the toys and the toys are super cool, but
still,
yeah. I kind of wish there was there probably should have been a physical version that didn't come with the toys.
Yeah.
That was just regular price. I feel like that would have helped because I was in Target earlier today and, they were very cleaned out of a lot of Switch stuff, which was cool to see, but they had plenty of Starlinks, but they weren't in the Switch aisle. They were over in the other aisle with like the big box things like the Atari flashbacks and whatnot.
Yeah.
Because there's
shit that nobody buys.
Because there's nowhere to merchandise that game with the regular size games.
Right.
And I think it was probably one of many of Starlink's problems, besides the fact that it just looked kind of off and was playing at the whole Toys to Life thing when that has passed. But still, it was well worth the $35, and it was also on sale for like $40 digitally all over the place, and a lot of places had it for $40 as well. I mean, it sucks that they're probably taking a loss on that, but I do hope they moved some copies of it. And I have seen a lot of commercials for it lately, too, which is smart.
I've seen a bunch too.
It's a very Christmas present kind of game, because it is a bit more expensive, and I'm sure it's going to be marked down a bunch over the holidays. So I think it's a smart move, and they're specifically calling out the Switch version that they're like, buy this game on Switch, you know, Star Fox, blah blah blah. Because I'm pretty sure they've just kind of written off the PS4 and Xbox One versions, because like, really, the only reason anyone cared about this game was because of the Star Fox content. Because when taken on its own, it just seems kind of generic sci-fi.
Right.
Minus the toys. And it's like that extra little bit of Nintendo, I guess, that they slapped onto it is kind of what makes this game worth it. Because like, I wasn't interested in it at all. Remember when they announced the thing before they announced the Star Fox stuff, like the year before? I was like, you're really going to do Toys to Life now?
Yeah, it's like, all right. I mean,
and it
God
looks
kind
of silly, and like, really, it is. All the character designs are like pretty generic, except the Star Fox characters. So, but you know, it's well voice acted. It's got high production values. It's neat.
All right then.
the demo for Katamari Damacy on Switch came out. Only on the Japanese eShop though.
Because why not?
Because
nobody else is interested in that game.
I don't know what the hell they're doing with this game. They're launching it on the same day as Smash Brothers, which, good job, guys. And then they're not even releasing the demo ahead of time in America. Like, I put the demo out everywhere now. I mean, so I downloaded the Japanese demo, which is in English, so, okay.
There you go.
There you go. And it's just the first level of the game. It looks great. It plays almost identical. There were a few things where I would, like, try to rub up against a wall and climb that felt a little different than the original PS2 version, which I still play relatively regularly, so that's fresh in my mind.
Right.
But it's just nice to see this game in HD. Runs super smooth, sounds great. It's just a wonderful little demo. So if you have a Switch and you've never played Katamari before, do yourself a favor, jump on the Japanese shop, get this demo. It's totally free. The demo's in English, and just enjoy the wonderment that is this game. I mean, geez, just watching the intro, that super insane intro,
so nuts
in HD,
it's so
is
nuts.
Wonderful. It's 100% the same And it's just absurd. So absurd and so delightful. I can't wait to get this game. And I know I'm not going to play much of it because Smash is coming out, but as soon as I need a quick diversion from Smash, I will be very happy to have Katamari in the house. And so will my wife. She's just happy to have that game on a thing that's easy to play.
It's just such a joyful experience.
No matter what. It really is.
Like, no matter when you play Katamari, there are very, very few moments in that game, and it was one of the smartest things they did because it's such a weird concept and such an obtuse kind of game. There are very, very few moments in that game where you are, like, frustrated with what you're doing.
It's just like, once you have a hang of the controls, it's like there's challenge there, but it's...
But it's just joyful the whole
time. It is.
Time.
It's just wonderful and really one of the best soundtracks any game has ever had.
I would argue that it has not been topped since it's been released.
At the very least, not within the Katamari series. Mm. It is a freaking masterpiece. The only other thing I picked up on Black Friday, well, I did pick up Facebook was doing a deal where they were selling a bunch of stuff, and I picked up a Pro Controller for $40. The D-pad
still need
sucks.
To get one.
Yeah, well, I'm selling mine to my sister because I got it, and then I was like, I don't need this. Like, I got it because it was a $40 Pro Controller, and
you
know, it's a legit Pro Controller. It's not like a weird ripoff or anything, but I opened it up, and I was like, well, the D-pad is not, you know, a better D-pad than the one that ones I have. So I don't know why
it.
I bought this. I don't need this. I have two Pro Controllers and two sets of Joy-Cons. I'm set for any four-player situation or more, so whatever.
You really are.
Yeah. But I did pick up Snipper Clips finally, because that was on sale for $10. I was like, you know what? That's the price that I was waiting for that game to come to, because that's exactly how much I feel like that was worth to me. And it's been a joy to play.
Yeah, my kids like it.
Yeah, it's neat. It's one of those
playing through it.
Yeah, it's one of those back pocket kind of games, you know?
Yeah.
I want to play something puzzle-ish for a few minutes. And you know, that's why I have the Picross games, and I'm glad to have Snipper Clips kind of thrown in there too. The biggest thing I wanted to talk about, though, was that I finally got Pokemon.
Got it from Level Up?
Yes. Yes, I did. Well, I got my Pokemon from Level Up, and I really like it.
Do you?
I really do.
Because
really...
I've heard really mixed things about it.
Yeah, it's really quite joyful. It's a very, very pleasant game. It doesn't have autosave, which is weird to kind of put yourself in that mindset. Like, all right, every time I stop playing, I need to make sure I manually save.
Yeah, that's
I'm so
weird...
used to games autosaving these days, you know?
That's a weird thing, especially when your target audience is kids, right? Like that.
Right? Yeah, it's really strange. But it's just unbelievably pleasant. It looks really nice. Like, I'm looking at it and thinking, I know these aren't, like, cutting-edge graphics, but there's something just really nice about it. It's very, very clean looking, and I really appreciate that. The whole... having recently played Pokemon Blue for the first time, going to this and the fact that there are no random battles is so wonderful. Like, seeing all the Pokemon on the map as you're walking around and like, I don't need another Weedle. I'm just going to walk right by it. You know, I'm not going to fight the 30th Rattata that is in this area because I can't see anything. I'm just going to avoid these battles that I don't want any part of. And that has just been wonderful to me, because that's been probably the biggest point of contention in this game, is the lack of wild Pokemon battles. Like,
right.
Whenever you go to a wild Pokemon, it just basically goes to the Pokemon Go screen, you know? So there's the Pokemon, and the little ring is shrinking over and over again, and you have to throw the Pokeball. And it's
Yeah, I'm
fun.
Okay with all of that.
Exactly. Like, it's super fun, and it's not like there aren't battles. Like, there are trainers everywhere. Like, there are trainer battles all over the freaking place. There's always someone standing around, and if you walk into their line of sight, they're going to challenge you. And then you have a Pokemon battle, and I haven't lost any yet because there hasn't been any remote challenge so far, but that's not bothering me at all. Like, it's a very relaxing and just nice experience. Like, it's very joyful. But the most important thing is that it did exactly what I hoped it would do, because my son will sit next to me and grab a Joy-Con and be the little helper guy, and he caught Pokemon.
That's all that matters.
That's all that matters to me. Like, he'll sit next to me, and I give him the Joy-Con, and he's just a little secondary character, and whenever we get to the little wild Pokemon things, I say, all right, dude, fling your wrist and catch the Pokemon, and he flings the thing, and it throws the Pokeball, and it catches it, and he's like, I caught him! Now I want to name him! And so he's come up with all these weird names, like Quender and stuff to name all the Pokemon. And he's just having a ball with it. And then I pulled out I took it out of the dock, and you can go to this like ridiculous mode where you can just pet your Pikachu or your Eevee or whatever your main Pokemon is. And I just put it in front of my daughter, Ellie, and she's like, Pikachu! And she starts rubbing the screen and like poking his tail, and he's reacting. I'm like, there's your price of admission right there. Like,
yep,
this is not game of the year material. This is not an in-depth thing. It's not the Pokemon game that's coming out next year, but I do hope. It's not
fucking supposed to be.
Exactly. It is the bridge between Pokemon Go and a full-fledged Pokemon game, because there is a lot, like, it goes through that progression. You go to towns, you talk to people, you follow the plot, you meet different characters, you select your team, you have battles, like, you're progressing through this like an RPG, and you're still doing those regular kind of RPG-style battles, but it also has that Pokemon Go link in there. It's very nice and it's wonderful, and I do hope that the next year's Pokemon game pulls some things from this, because the lack of random encounters, it's one of, that's always been such a huge turnoff for me in RPGs.
Oh, sure.
Random encounters.
Yeah,
one of the reasons Chrono Trigger was the first RPG I ever played through, because that didn't have the random encounters. You could always see what was on the map. Like, if there was a monster there, you could see it, and now I understand what's happening. Not I'm walking, and then the screen just went all googly, and now there's six guys in tanks standing in front of me. Like, where the hell were these guys? This doesn't make any sense.
Why are there six dudes in tanks?
So, yeah, I think Pokemon Let's Go is simply wonderful. It's so much. I'm having so much fun playing the game, and it's filling in a lot for me that playing Pokemon Blue didn't.
Right.
Just because, you know, it's older, and I did have a lot of fun with Pokemon Blue. I did. I really, really did enjoy the game. And I probably would have finished it had there not been, you know, other things going on in my life and whatnot. But
sure.
This one I'm probably going to finish, because it's, you know, like I said, it's relatively straightforward. It's just joyful to play. It's very pretty, and the music is wonderful. It sounds so good. Because it's all those original tunes from Pokemon Yellow and Blue and Red, but just done with, it's very string quartet, you know? It's very, a lot of the music, like, some of it's very, you know, fully orchestrated sounding, but a lot of it just sounds like very reserved, little plucky strings and stuff like that. It's very, very nice.
That's really awesome. What's really cool about it, too, I think, is that, because it has the trading feature built into it, right? Like, so you can trade Pokemon from your Pokemon Go account into it.
It does. I haven't messed with that at all, because I haven't played Pokemon Go in forever, but you're right. I totally forgot about that aspect of it.
Well, my daughter, both of them actually, they've both been asking, like, can we go out and can we catch some Pokemon, you know, like, whenever we're just out and about, can I have your phone so we can do this? So that in case Santa happens to bring them a copy of Let's Go Pikachu or Let's Go Eevee or whoever, they can transfer the Pokemon to their accounts, and they're like really excited about it. So
still have Go on my phone. I bet I could give myself a handful of nice Pokemon.
Yeah. Like, that's the thing. They're like, can you know, Katie wants my milk tank, and I'm like, I don't know if you're getting them. Just saying. Pretty badass.
I gotta think. I don't know that I've come across, like, I'm still pretty early in the game. I just beat the first gym leader, Brock.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm still pretty early in the game. So I don't even know if that's available to me yet. Like, I feel like if that was something I could have done, the game would have told me. Because, you know, every time I'm unlocking new features as I go, it's telling me, like, now you can do this.
Right.
But maybe it's just a spot in, like, a Pokemon Center that I haven't come across yet. But
here's some cool shit.
Game is a goddamn delight.
And that is really all it had to be.
Exactly. Really, if you're a Pokemon fan, just even if you really liked Pokemon Go and you've never messed with an actual Pokemon game before, just, you got to give this a try. It's just a very, very pleasant experience. Just the right level of old school, just the right level of new school. Very pretty. Sounds wonderful. Big fat thumbs up from me.
That's awesome. I'm really excited about it. I really honestly am.
It's cool. It's a fun game to play with people too. It's the co-op aspect is nice. All right, let's get to work here. 10:20:30. We've got a lot of games to talk about. That actually went a lot longer than I expected it to. Story of our show. We should just call this, the name of the show should be, well, that went on a lot longer than I thought.
Welcome to this week's episode of Fuck, That Went On Forever.
Not unlike this cough. It won't go away.
No, it really won't.
All right, so 10:20:30. Let's talk about games, that, important games, important in quotes, games that came out in November 2008. We'll start with Naruto Ultimate Ninja Storm for PS3.
Mm-hmm. I hear that this is a fighting game I should have played at some point, but I was never all that into Naruto.
I kind of was, and I was specifically into the Naruto fighting games on GameCube. I thought those were really, really good.
Yeah.
I did not play this game because I don't think I had a PS3 at that time when this came out. I can't remember if I had my PS3 yet, but I remember the reason I put this one on the list in particular was because I had never seen a game look like this before.
Right.
This was the first game that so nailed that cel shading. It still looks amazing. They did this bit with the way they distorted the characters when they moved. That typically speaking, you know, you'd see like the Dragon Ball games or whatever, even the Naruto games up to this point, they'd be cel shaded, but they'd still really look like video games. The characters moved in Ultimate Ninja Storm like anime characters. Like they did that business where they'd really exaggerate some of their movements. And this is one of those things that I feel like games miss a lot. Like, and it's how important animation is. Like, something can look as amazingly pretty as just the most gorgeous thing you've ever seen, but if it doesn't move right, it's always going to lose that certain piece to it. It was right. One of the things that was so impressive about, like, I remember when I got when we were playing the Dreamcast Interactive for the first time, and you played Ready to Rumble Boxing, right? That game moved like nothing I had ever seen before. Like,
yeah, they moved like boxers.
Yeah, and they were cartoony and ridiculous, but still, the animation in that game was stunning. It was spectacular. It gave this real tactile feel to all of the hits. So when they announced that there was going to be, what the hell was that wrestling game that came out for? The Royal Rumble or whatever. I was like, oh my God, if there's a wrestling game that moves like this, I'll buy it. And I don't even like wrestling, but I would love that. And of course it didn't, because so few games take that kind of animation into account when they're thinking about how the game's going to feel. It's like that for me is the difference between Skyrim and Zelda, because Zelda games always feel good because of the way the characters animate and the way it always feels good to swing your sword and hit something. Whereas in Skyrim, it is animation. And then, you know, things happening to the reacting to set animations, and it always looks animated and not natural.
Right. I would agree with that. Yeah.
Naruto Ultimate Ninja Storm so nailed the animation. The game was just unbelievable.
Well, all right then. Yeah, don't have much experience with it apart from somebody that I used to work with at GameStop whose name I cannot remember. Not because they were a bad person or anything, but you know, just doesn't matter. Was like, you have got to watch this show. And I was like, on that note, I'm not gonna.
Do I really?
You like anime and you haven't seen Naruto? Like, you don't fucking know what you're talking about. And I was like, all right, well, I'm out. That's just ensured that I'll never see this. So, you know, that probably says way more about me, but whatever.
So, moving on. Resistance 2 came out for PlayStation 3.
I loved the Resistance games.
I never played the Resistance
games. They were really good.
They were really brown.
They were super brown. But But they were really good. They had a cool story, and like the monsters were fucking cool, and like, I don't know. I really liked them. They weren't as good as they were made out to be. Because like, I keep in mind back when all that stuff was coming out, it was like, is this the Halo killer?
Exactly. No, what's gonna be the Halo killer?
It's not the Halo killer. It's not. Sorry. You know, it and that's fine. It doesn't have to be. It can just be Resistance.
Yeah, not every game needs to kill another game. They could just be good.
Yeah. All that's fine. But I mean, there was so much hype when the Resistance games were like first hitting of like, this is going to be the thing that is going to dethrone, you know, what Halo had become at that point. And maybe I'm wrong. I don't remember it as much with the sequel to Resistance of like, we had all kind of learned that like, oh no, it's not going to be the Halo killer. That's cool. All right. It's just a pretty good game at this point.
Yeah. I think that's pretty much where we were at that point, because as we know, the next game that we're talking about was Gears of War 2 came out, and Gears of War, I think, was kind of a big chapter in what ended that whole, like, what's going to be the Halo killer, because Gears of War wasn't a Halo killer. It was just like, oh, there are other games.
Like, oh, we can do other stuff?
That's we can cool. do other stuff that's just as awesome. And I played through a little bit of Gears of War and enjoyed my time with it. I was playing co-op with a buddy of mine, Jared, and I did enjoy my time with it. But really, most of what I was interested in was just how stunning the game was.
Yeah, it does look really good.
Yeah, it's really a lot of that comes down to the art direction, which is it was very smartly drawn game. Like it doesn't have a ton of like super bright colors or anything. It was going for this hyper realistic look, but at the same time, it really worked well within the limitations of what the platform could do. You know, with just smart camera angles and showing just the right amount of detail. I do find the character designs to be absurd.
Well, but that was rather the point of them, I think.
Yeah, like every dude is unfathomably beefy, and every woman is like a stick figure, and it's just strange. But it's a relatively fun game, and I remember when Gears 2 came out and just being so impressed that they somehow made it look even better. Again, I barely played this game, but I've seen a lot of footage from it, you know, just from working in stores at the time. And if this was just looking at where the 360 was at that time, and this was 10 years ago, and the landscape has changed so freaking much since then.
It really has.
Like, this was, you know, Resistance 2. This was a time when the PlayStation 3 was trying to claw its way back, and the Xbox 360 was very much king of the hill. Like, it wasn't even close. Everybody had a 360, and you know, the Wii was, you know, off off in crazy town.
Off doing Wii things.
Of off like... doing, you know, cool stuff and not so cool stuff. And...
yeah, but bowling.
Wii bowling was great.
I mean, it was.
I really did. Wii's got a great library, but it's got a weird library. The Xbox 360 was just like, this was where modern gaming was at the time.
Yeah,
and there was a reason it was King of the Hill. And it's just like, it's so crazy looking at this and like looking at all these games that were coming out on 360 and thinking of like where we are now with the Xbox One and just how much that's changed and how many wrong moves Microsoft made in comparison to Sony at this point. Very, very strange. But yeah, Gears 2, good times.
Yeah, I played this a bunch with my buddy when we were living down in Florida, and like you said, it's fun. It's never something that I was like, oh, I have to get a 360 for this.
I'm gonna read all the books.
Yeah, I can't wait. But I definitely enjoyed it for the absurdity that it was, because it is, as you said, absurd.
Quite. Speaking of absurd, I have never been a Banjo-Kazooie fan.
Mm-hmm.
I have never much cared for Banjo-Kazooie.
No, because it's not good. There, I said it. I don't give a shit.
I can actually hear Dean yelling right now.
Well, he's wrong.
He somehow heard you say that. Yeah, no, I didn't like the first game. I didn't mess with the second game because I didn't like the first game.
Right.
Banjo-Kazooie Nuts and Bolts. So here's the thing. I did play Donkey Kong 64 because I was a huge Donkey Kong Country fan. And I wanted to like that game quite a bit, but it was basically like Banjo-Kazooie with even more collectibles. Like, now yeah. Collect all the pink bananas. There's 750 of them in this level. They're next to the orange bananas.
But have you seen the pink bananas?
Oh. Yeah, so Banjo-Kazooie Nuts and Bolts comes out, and it's one of Rare's most beloved properties. There are people who swear by the Banjo games. Like I said, I'm not one of them. I bought Yooka-Laylee because I really wanted to, you know, maybe that would be my way in, since it didn't look like a hideous N64 game, and that didn't really do it for me, as charming as the characters were. But this game gets a lot of hate, and I don't know that it's necessarily warranted because I haven't played it, but it was such an interesting thing to watch from afar, because having not been a Banjo-Kazooie fan and really not being a fan of modern Rare at all, I really wanted to see how they were going to handle the Banjo-Kazooie license, because this is a game that people want. They want a third Banjo game, and they released this game, and it just wasn't like the other Banjo games. It's like a weird spin-off kind of thing where you're building ships and stuff. But I really liked the redesign of the characters. I thought that weird angular look was a really smart move for them. I thought the characters looked nice. The game looked nice, but man, people hate this game.
Yeah, it is not loved.
No, it does have its fans, don't get me wrong. There are a lot of, you know, defenders of this game out there, but by and large, like, people still want Banjo-Kazooie 3. And the fact that Microsoft hasn't gone and done it yet is just seriously astonishing to me.
Well, I mean, Microsoft... You know, we make the joke about Nintendo all the time of like, well, Nintendo does Nintendo things, but like Microsoft kind of does Microsoft things sometimes, where it's like, really? That's what you got?
All right. Buying up tons of studios these days, so hopefully they're buying up a studio that knows how to make good Rare-style games. Because I will say this, after playing Yooka-Laylee, there's a good game in there somewhere. Like,
in Yooka-Laylee?
In Yooka-Laylee and essentially in Banjo-Kazooie, because Yooka-Laylee is essentially Banjo-Kazooie.
Right.
There's definitely I can see the appeal of something like this. I just wish somebody would make it super polished. And that's what somebody needs to do to Banjo-Kazooie, because that was the reason I didn't enjoy the original Banjo-Kazooie, because it didn't feel right. It didn't feel that, you know, I could see all the cracks, you know? It didn't feel like Mario 64. It felt like just this thing that was almost awesome but just not quite right, and that's what Banjo-Kazooie needs, and it certainly doesn't need Nuts and Bolts.
Certainly doesn't need what it got.
All right, speaking of things we don't need, Call of Duty World at War came out for PS3, Xbox 360, and Wii.
I mean, do we not need Call of Duty?
I'm trying to remember where this was past Modern Warfare, right? This was when they went back to World War II after years of Modern Warfare. Am I imagining that?
I have no idea. I don't know.
But it was a big game, came out then. I think we should move on because, you know, we don't want to be here all night. We got a lot to talk about.
It's Call of Duty.
It's Call of Duty. It came out every year. It still does.
Came out every year. Still comes out every year. Sells a ton of copies every fucking year. And it always will, because some of them are really good, and even the ones that aren't so good are still pretty fun.
Yeah, I will say that what was interesting at the time was this was back when Activision was still putting a lot of effort into the Wii ports of these games.
Mm-hmm.
And even though they're deeply flawed, I always tried them out every year just to see what they did. And it's one of those situations where, you know, if the PS3 and 360 versions weren't fresh in your mind and you just saw this for the first time and all you had was a Wii, it's a pretty good looking game.
Yeah.
Pretty well put together. And again, I really liked the Wii Remote Nunchuck combo for first person shooters. I love that. Again, because it always worked for me. I didn't have, you know, Windows shining on my television.
Right.
SmackDown versus Raw 2009. Do you remember this game at all?
Yeah, this one. SmackDown vs. Raw 2009 is one of the best of the SmackDown vs. Raw games. It, you know, it had a lot of really good stuff that was in it. It had a lot of really good stuff that was carried over from the, you know, the previous iterations. But what it had that kind of separated it out from the other ones was the Road to WrestleMania thing, which was just like this really fun story mode that's in there. None of these games have been anywhere near as good as the old N64 ones, but this one, that's kind of the problem with it. Like, if you had to pick between playing the SmackDown versus Raw that came out this year versus this one, whatever one's easier to get, you know, and that is unfortunate. To be able to say that a game that came out 10 years ago is, yeah, it's fine. You know, just play this one. You won't really notice any difference.
Yeah, that's kind of a shame.
The hair still looks as terrible in both editions. Like, why is your hair just straight like a board? That's weird. And it's going through the mat now? That's cool. You guys never fixed the clipping? Awesome.
Oh, hey, and unlike the most recent SmackDown or whatever wrestling game, this one will actually work.
This one will actually work. No, they did fix this year's. Last year, like, don't even play last year. That was broken.
Last year's was hysterically broken. Yeah. So much so that they didn't even bother making a new one for Switch this year.
No.
They're like, yeah, never mind.
Oof. Yeah, it was
I don't know what we were thinking.
It was real bad.
I mean,
this one actually works. And I mean, this one has AJ Styles on the cover and his sexy soccer mom haircut. So, I mean, there is that aspect.
There is that.
However, 2009 had Triple H and Shawn Michaels on the cover, and both of those dudes are bald now. So, you know.
We'll see what happens next year.
Budget hands.
I gotta say, I don't understand the thought process behind not making a wrestling game on the Switch. I mean,
it doesn't make a ton of sense.
It's like the local co-op machine, and every kid in the world is getting one this Christmas.
Yep.
How are you not putting your wrestling game on the Switch? Like,
how is there not a pro wrestling? I don't fucking understand it, Chris.
I don't understand it either.
Doesn't make any sense.
And it never will.
No.
So here's another thing that doesn't make any sense. Animal Crossing City Folk came out for the Wii.
What the fuck is this? I never even played it.
I have never played this game either.
Wow.
That's how little I cared about this release of Animal Crossing City Folk, because...
That's incredible.
Because I played the DS one, and I was like, all right, I loved the DS one. And then this one came out.
The Street Pass and all that shit?
That was the 3DS one.
Oh, okay.
The DS one was like the first portable one. And I was like, wow, that was really awesome. I'm super stoked about this. And then, like, they made this one on the Wii, and their big thing with this one was, like, you could go to, like, the city or whatever, and it just didn't look very different from the DS one that I had just sunk, like, over a year of constant playing into. And sure. They were really pushing the Wii Speak with this one.
That's what this one was.
Possibly the worst voice chat peripheral ever made. And I just passed on this one. I was like, yeah, this doesn't look different enough for me. I'll just wait for the next Animal Crossing, and which was the 3DS one, which New Leaf, which was amazing. And I poured tons of hours into that. And when Animal Crossing comes out on Switch, I will absolutely buy that. This one, I just skipped. I couldn't see myself actually spending the time with this one because it didn't do much new. And I want that in a new Animal Crossing game. Because if it feels exactly like the old Animal Crossing, I'm going to get bored real quick because I've already done all those chores. You know, it's got to add something to it, some quality of life thing.
I haven't played an Animal Crossing since the original because it's just Animal.
The 3DS one had, I had a lot of people around 3DS. Like, mm-hmm. I was working in the comic book store at the time. A lot of other people with 3DSs would come in. We'd trade fruit and go to each other's villages and do all that kind of stuff. So that social aspect was really fun. But there were also a lot of little quality of life things in the 3DS ones. Yeah, a 3DS one that made the game more fun to play. So I really enjoyed that. And I'm certain that having the game on the Switch, being able to play it on the TV and play it on the go, even if it's not a huge leap forward, I know with that, like, the mobile game that they did and the other, like, weirdo house arrest game that they came out with, there's a lot of cool quality of life things that I'm hoping they bring over into this next proper Animal Crossing game. So I'm really stoked for it. But this one, just you got to be doing something wrong if you got me skipping an Animal Crossing game.
Yeah, I really tried with the mobile one and just could not get into it.
Oh, I didn't even touch the mobile one. I knew that straight away. I was looking at Pocket Camp. That's not for me. I'm waiting for the next one. I'm waiting for the next big one.
You know how much I loved the original Animal Crossing.
I do. And we both did.
Nope. None of them have spoken to me in quite the same manner.
Well, I'm hoping that the Switch one can recapture the magic, because the 3DS one and the DS one definitely the 3DS one in particular really recaptured that magic for me of the original one. The 3DS one was just wonderful. So fingers crossed, this is what the next proper Animal Crossing will be a real winner. Speaking of games I didn't like, Mortal Kombat versus DC Universe came out for PS3 and 360 10 years ago.
I love this game. I did not care for this game. It sucks. But I love the absurdity of it. I love the fact that there are fatalities for, like, Superman, but, like, he doesn't kill you. That's great. Yeah. It's just so silly. I will always love this game because of how much fun it is to play as Green Lantern. No game has gotten, not that there really have been a ton, but like some of the Lego games and some of the other stuff Green Lantern has been in. But Green Lantern is so fun to play in this game. He's got such cool combos and stuff that you can do. And they're all, you know, factory combos like so much of the Mortal Kombat style games are. And like knowing how you feel about the Mortal Kombat games and the way that they look and they move and all of that, this game was absolutely not something that was for you.
It wasn't, but I did really enjoy Aquaman.
Aquaman is super fun in this. Like, some of the weird stage-activated things that you can do are really fun in this game.
Freaking Batmobile just runs over.
It's just absurd. Like, Marvel versus Capcom works as a fighting game. And Mortal Kombat versus DCU works as an exercise in absurdity.
I will give it that.
I kind of enjoy that about it. And I would love to see an updated version of this, quite honestly.
I look back on it a lot more fondly than I looked at it at the time. I hated this game when it came out. And now I look back on it like, yeah, that's pretty silly. It's not for me. I don't want to play it. It still looks terrible, but at least I can enjoy some of the absurdity of it.
Yeah, this game rules.
Opposite side of that coin is Castlevania Judgment for the Wii.
Judgment, four thumbs down.
I was thinking the same thing. Dave Chappelle, I wish I had four thumbs so I could give this four thumbs. I wish I had two more hands so I could give this game four thumbs down.
That's right. What so bad.
There's not even like this basic vague core of a somewhat fun fighting game is in there.
Nope.
Like, even just vaguely, but that's not enough. It's because it's still not good. It's just not good.
No.
It looks atrocious. The art direction, like, here, we're going to redesign every one of these characters and like just complete batshit insanity. Like Simon Belmont, this bright pink hair, which, you know, had been established before, but now his whole outfit is made out of like white belts. This game just looks so bad.
And that really is the thing that sucks about this game, is because a fighting game in the Castlevania universe is a great idea.
Oh, definitely.
That is a great idea. There's so many cool characters and fighting styles, stuff that could be done with.
And those ideas at play in this game, but they're all executed incredibly poorly. The only thing that's not executed incredibly poorly is the music. Music's pretty decent in it. Not like, oh my god, this is the best remix of Vampire Killer I've ever heard, but it's still pretty solid stuff. God, the cutscene. Ugh.
Yeah. Oh, god. Yuck.
Let's stop talking about it.
Yuck.
Left 4 Dead came out for Xbox 360.
I love me some Left 4 Dead.
Yeah. I mean, I barely played it, but it's neat.
Oh, it's super fun. When you got four people and you are working through that game, like true co-op, and like four people in a room trying to survive a zombie apocalypse. God damn it, that game is fun. Left 4 Dead 2, so much better. But Valve doesn't make bad games. You know what I mean? Like they
I just
really
wish
don't.
They'd make games again.
I do too. And like I would really love to see like a Left 4 Dead 3 or, you know, half Portal 7 or all the other things that we joke about. But like, man, this game was super fun. It was super, super fun. And like the different character classes, everything just worked so well and was so perfectly balanced about this game. I mean, if you're not into zombie shit, like this was absolutely not for you. But this played like a love letter to old George A. Romero films. And I was there for that. I was into it.
Yeah, I'm not a huge zombie guy, so this game didn't really speak to me. But I do remember, I know a lot of people who really enjoyed this one.
Yeah, it's great.
I'll tell you what I did not enjoy was Sonic Unleashed.
I don't think anybody enjoyed it.
Ugh. I picked this one up, too. Just,
of course you did.
Did I pick this up or did I get it for free? I feel like I got this game for free because I was a manager at the time. I think I was on 360, I think, and it was boy, this game was just dumb. Here's the thing. I remember playing this game and thinking like, all right, I'm running around as Sonic. It looks nice. This is kind of fun. And then I get to the Werehog, which, stop. You can't just put were in front of something. Like, yeah. That doesn't work. It's a werewolf because it's a dude who turns into a wolf. Mm-hmm. If it was a werehog, it'd be Sonic turning into a hedgehog. But
right.
He's turning into a wolf.
Yeah.
It's just, the whole damn thing's flawed. But the werehog
not
stuff...
not how lycanthropy works.
The werehog stuff was God of War. It was a straight ripoff of God of War because, like, he had stretchy arms that worked just like the Blades of Chaos, and like I think they had like a dodge roll that was mapped to the right analog stick. It was just like, holy crap! They just, you know, hook, line, and sinker, just the whole nine yards, just whole hog robbed God of War and slapped it in the middle
werehog.
Of a whole werehog and slapped it in the middle of a Sonic game. How very dare you?
Yeah, it was no good. Nobody likes that.
Ugh.
Speaking of things nobody liked. Actually, that's not true. People did like Tomb Raider Underworld.
They did.
I didn't play it.
Which one was this?
This was the...
Was this the last one pre-reboot, or
I
was there more?
I believe so. I think this was the last one before it was rebooted.
Well, I gotta look this up.
And this one was better? Like, it, the problem with this game was that it was relatively well-received, you know, like, as far as critical reception, but people were so fucking sick of Tomb Raider at this point.
This was this the first attempt at a reboot? I kind of feel like that's what this one was.
Maybe, kind of. I'm talking out of my ass a little bit, because I did not play this one. Or if I did play it, I did not play very much of it. Because I, like everyone else, was so fucking tired of Tomb Raider at this point, because it was just the same old formula over and over again. The story had gotten so ridiculous at that point that it was just like, all right, enough. Mm. Enough. And then, I mean, this new trilogy that they're now on is just... fucking amazing.
They fixed it.
They fixed everything about it, because they basically took everything that people loved about Tomb Raider, and, you know, which at this point, by the time Underworld came out, was few and far between of what you were actually getting, and actually built a really good game around it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but this here, like, you were still having a lot of the, like, a lot of the problems with Tomb Raider were that, like, it just wasn't a very good game.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Like, apart from Lara Croft being an interesting character that people enjoyed looking at to begin with, and then, you know, some of the stuff in the first Tomb Raider, like the very first one where it's like, oh, I'm this, you know, cool badass chick with two pistols and I'm going against a fucking T-Rex. This is amazing. You know, like, that wears off pretty quickly, though. So, this game did do well critically, but did not sell well at all. I mean, less than 3 million copies.
Well,
that's crazy.
Yeah, that is, that's pretty darn low, especially for a Tomb Raider game.
For a game that, like, bears the Tomb Raider name, less than 3 million copies is an abysmal failure.
Speaking of abysmal failures.
Oh, man.
This was, I think, the low point for the Tony Hawk franchise. Tony Hawk's Motion came out for Nintendo DS. Now, if I remember correctly, this was, let me look at my timeline real quick. Proving Ground. Yeah, this was the 2000, this was the only Tony Hawk game in 2008.
Yeah. There's snowboards in this one?
I don't be sure, why not? Because this was the year before Tony Hawk Ride. Was that the one with the stupid peripheral?
Yeah. Tony Hawk's were out of ideas.
Where you just, all right, now you're on a skateboard. Enjoy. Mm-hmm. This was such a, like, holy cow. This is how low we've gotten. This year, here's a game that is only for the DS. That's the only Tony Hawk games coming out this year with a motion sensing pack and boo. Thumbs down.
You had to move the DS all around, mm-hmm. like, which made it really hard to see the screen. Like, I get what you're going for, but no. It's just, man, I don't know, like, really, if we look back, these two franchises that we just mentioned back-to-back, Tony Hawk and Tomb Raider, I don't know that there are two franchises that have gone from such lofty heights to such lows in the course of their existence.
And they're perfect examples of why you shouldn't run your games into the ground, because that's what happened to Tony Hawk. Into the ground.
I adored those Tony Hawk games, as did everybody else. I looked forward to them. I could not wait. And now I could not care any less.
Same here.
Like, the Tony Hawk games have been so bad recently that I have less nostalgia for the old ones than I did.
That's a damn shame.
Like, they have legitimately made me, like, were those games actually any good? They probably weren't. They were probably shitty.
That's such a shame. Thinking back on, like, Tony Hawk, Guitar Hero, really Activision, just stop annualizing things.
I mean, except for Call of Duty, because those still sell.
Those still sell, but eventually they won't.
But at why some was Tony point, Hawk annualized?
Yeah, that's not something that needed. You didn't need a new one every year. You just didn't.
You didn't have any new ideas. And, like, there, to be fair, some of the later Tony Hawk games were pretty good. Like, you know, once they went to, like, Underground, those were still pretty cool. And, like, even Project 8, that one was pretty good. But, like, they just got bad. They got really, really bad.
Thumbs
there
down.
There was the Disney version of it. You remember that one? The Disney Skate or whatever?
Oh, Disney yeah.
Disney Skate Adventure or some shit that Activision made. I forgot about that. Where you could be like fucking Tarzan. Oh, it's so bad. That game deserves a whole episode, Chris. I'm not going to lie.
We'll put it on the summer series next year.
Okay. That yes. Yes. Disney's Extreme Skate Adventure will be on the 2019 summer series.
We're bad.
I bet you that game's way better than we remember.
I don't remember it at all. So
I don't think I even played it. So I do remember Tarzan was in it. So that's the thing.
All right, we're definitely going long. So let's just blast through these last two. Chrono Trigger came out for the Nintendo DS. Very
and
nice
Chrono
port.
Trigger. Yeah, fucking play it.
It's a very nice port. It definitely play it. I still prefer the Super Nintendo one because there's some additional content they tacked on to the end of Chrono Trigger where they kind of answer the whole Shala Magus thing, and I really didn't like that answer. So
yeah,
I like to pretend that didn't happen and just stick with the Super Nintendo version.
But it is portable Chrono Trigger.
Exactly.
Like,
it's portable Chrono Trigger.
One of the ways that you can play portable Chrono Trigger.
So. It's got the PlayStation cutscenes in it, which is cool.
Yeah.
Because the problem with the PlayStation version of Chrono Trigger said it's got the worst loading times ever.
Oh, it's so bad.
So like those cutscenes are super awesome, but it's damn near unplayable. And the Super Nintendo one is perfect. It doesn't have the cool cutscenes, but YouTube exists now, so whatever. Chrono Trigger is one of my favorite games of all time. If you haven't played it before, DS version is a great way to do it.
It is.
Mirror's Edge also came out back when Electronic Arts was under the impression that releasing new IPs and encouraging creativity was a good idea.
Did you play Mirror's Edge?
I did not.
I enjoyed the shit out of this game.
It looked like something I wanted to enjoy. I think it was just one of those games that really slipped through the cracks with me. And honestly, it was probably because Chrono Trigger DS came.
Most likely. It was such a cool idea, like a first-person parkour game that actually didn't make you want to throw up. It was just really, really well done. It was super fun to play through.
Really good looking game. The level design
was really cool. It still looks good.
Yeah.
I mean, we're talking early PS3, and the game still looks good. It still plays well. It ran really smooth. You know, it was pretty shallow for what it was, but...
But it was a new idea, and that's cool.
It was a new idea, and it was a damn good time. And, like, this was the type of game, kind of like in the same vein as Tony Hawk, of, like, when you played this game well, you felt super badass. Because it was just so fun, and you were doing shit that was so cool.
Well, with that, we're going to take ourselves a quick break, and then we're going to talk about... unfortunately, much smaller categories of important games that came out in November of 1998 and November of 1988. You are listening to the Stone Age Gamer podcast from Geekade.com. Stick around. And now here's a look at some of the other original content available right now at Geekade.com.
First up, there's no denying the popularity, Chris, of the WWE. There's just not. People love wrestling.
They do.
But I dare say, could they love it more?
Could they?
Geekade's Alex Whatley dives deep, and I do mean deep, into the world of New Japan Pro Wrestling and why, if you're a fan of WWE, but sometimes feel like they could do a whole lot better, like everything better. New Japan Pro Wrestling might just be the organization for you. Don't miss What's on Wrestling, how New Japan Pro Wrestling is different from American wrestling, located in the think tank.
It's a long article, but it's worth a read.
It's definitely worth it. Like, I am a fan of New Japan Pro Wrestling, and I learned stuff from this article. So, there you go.
There you go. Next, since joining me as co-host on the Waveback podcast a little over a year ago, there has been one constant with Matt. He loves the ActRaiser soundtrack. Well, we finally did an episode on it, and I gotta say, it's pretty darn good. Find out why this genre-bending SNES classic is still worth listening to today in Waveback Episode 68, ActRaiser.
It's a good dude, that Matt Ramo.
I like him.
I like him, too. Finally, Chris, June Covington is a gifted biologist and geneticist with no value for humans. If that sounds like a great setup for a supervillain, you'd be right. She may have only been around since 2011, but Toxic Doxy left a pretty big impression on those lucky enough to read any of the comics she's appeared in. Learn all about why this disturbing woman deserves your attention, and welcome to the D-list, Toxic Doxy.
Toxic Doxy.
That's not what I said. I drank way too much and way too quick.
You can catch all this great stuff plus tons of other articles, videos, podcasts, and more right now at Geekade.com. And we're back. Let's travel 20 years into the past. Brain. And you're the one who's been drinking, not me. Hop in the Wayback Machine to November 1998.
Oh, I really feel like you and I should make the Wayne's World dooley doo noises while this. Funny for some people. So 20 years ago, Chris.
Yeah, 20 years ago. This, for a long time, was my favorite version of Tetris. Tetris DX came out for the Game Boy Color. Game Boy Color also came out November of 1998.
It did.
Phew, boy.
This game's good.
This game's really good. It's just a very tight Tetris game with a great soundtrack. Yeah.
Excellent version of Tetris. It is... It did not try to reinvent the wheel as this new Tetris game has, which I really want to play Tetris Effect.
I do too.
Especially in VR.
I actually do too.
That really sounds like a damn good time. Or a seizure. And either way.
Can it be both?
¿Por qué no los dos? Yeah, I'm into it. But you're right. Tetris DX was an excellent version of Tetris.
It was. It had a, you know... Great. I think it had a quick save feature, mm-hmm. if I'm remembering correctly, which was kind of new at the time. Like, you could turn off your Game Boy and then come back to Tetris DX, like, literally right where you left off. It was very easy to control. Had, like I said, it had great music, great presentation. It kind of dropped the whole Russian aspect of it. Like, it just had this nice, colorful presentation that looked really good on the original Game Boy Color screen.
Yeah, they didn't go, like, crazy weird with the colors.
Yeah, it was just
all kind of works. Yeah.
Just smart. Great version of Tetris. We also had the sequel to Oddworld Abe's Odyssey, Oddworld Abe's Exodus, for PlayStation.
Gotta be honest, I have never loved the Oddworld games.
I have never played Abe's Exodus because I promised myself I wouldn't play this game until I finished the first game, which I never did. I loved Abe's Odyssey.
Did you?
I really did. I freaking loved that game. The problem was that I was playing it with this other guy, Chris, that I worked with, and he introduced me to just how many Mudokons I had missed.
Mm.
He was like, check this out. You fall down this hole. Oh, God. Oh, God. Now I have to save all of them. And that's when I gave up. Because there was no way I was going to find all of them. Like, they were so well hidden. But I loved this game, and I'm sad that I never played any of the sequels because I never wanted to move on until I finished that first game. And I didn't play the re-release when it came out just a couple of years ago, because I'm a bad person.
No, I tried it when the re-release came out. I was like, maybe I missed something the first time around. Nope, it's not for me.
Yeah, no, I thought this game was super clever. I loved the way it looked. I loved the story it was telling. I really, really liked the idea of this, like, you know, possessing the little, the dudes, the machine guns and stuff, and just saving all the little guys. I liked this game. I really, really liked this game. And, I don't know, maybe someday I'll go back to it. Maybe someday they'll put, I don't know, is the Oddworld on Switch yet? Did they put that, New and Tasty on Switch? I can't remember.
I don't know.
I don't either, but... That's a series that went in a bunch of weird directions, because that was supposed to be this big, like, 5-part series, if I remember correctly. That was like
something like that.
All these different characters are going to have their own odysseys, and they did that with Abe, and then they did it with Munch, and then they did Stranger's Wrath, and that was kind of it.
Yeah,
for the whole Oddworld series, and
that game did very well. Like, Stranger's Wrath was kind of a big deal.
Yeah, kind of was. It was a really interesting game, too. I played a little bit of that one.
Yeah.
I didn't play through it because, again, my Oddworld thing was like, no, I'll still turn on my PlayStation. I will finish Oddworld. I never did. That's just not going to happen. I admit defeat.
Yeah, that's fine.
We don't need to say much about this because we've kind of already talked about this. Tomb Raider 3 came out for PlayStation.
Yeah, I mean, 20 years ago, this was like really... God, that game is old. This was really when the bloom started to come off the rose, as it
were. Right? Tomb Raider 1 was like a revelation.
Yeah, it was the last new and it was different. And Tomb Raider 2 was, you know, a better version of Tomb Raider 1, and then Tomb Raider 3 was like, you guys are out of shit.
Yeah. A little bit of more of the same there.
Yeah, and like the problem with Tomb Raider 3 was that they didn't fix any of the problems that Tomb Raider 1 or 2 had. And because the game was so rushed to get it out, because like we have to capitalize on this,
yeah.
It had new problems, so it wasn't great. It looked better, it controlled a little bit better, but there was still just a lot of it was just so formulaic at that point. Which, when you're only into your third game in a franchise, you know, like there's Mega Man is formulaic, but there's iterations upon what the bosses can do and the way that you use the weapons and how things interact.
Mm-hmm.
Tomb Raider became iterations of like, oh, this is just a point and click puzzle. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like there just wasn't anything new. And graphically at the time, while it did look better, we're still talking relatively polygonal things. Like the backgrounds were still kind of generic. You know, mm-hmm. It's not like where you play the new Tomb Raider games now and you're like, oh my God, all of these things are so different and so interesting to look at in intricate, detailed worlds. It was like, oh, there's, you know, some triangles that are vaguely Mayan. And oh, there's, you know, like, it just wasn't great.
Yeah. All right, I got to write that one down.
Triangles that are vaguely Mayan? You know.
Don't want to forget that. No. And then, of course, I have no connection to Tomb Raider 3.
Yeah.
It's blue. Tomb Raider 2 was red. 3 was the blue one.
Uh-huh.
3 was the third Tomb Raider game I didn't want to play because it didn't look interesting to me in the least.
Yeah, I mean, it's sold, but like...
Yeah, whatever. Yeah. And then, of course, November of 1998. We're not going to spend much time talking about this one because we spent a crap load of time talking about it last week. Legend of Zelda Ocarina of Time for N64.
Pretty good from what I hear.
Yeah. They say...
People are telling me.
They say this one's pretty decent.
The Witch Hunt.
Witch Hunt. I love Zelda Ocarina of Time. I think it's a masterpiece. I think it deserves an HD remake. And they should really do that.
It does. That'll be the next version of that I don't play.
Probably.
Until I get a controller, maybe.
All right, let's jump back in time to November 1988. 30 years ago, R-Type hit the Sega Master System.
I fucking
R-Type. R-Type's awesome, and this was such a great version.
R-Type was great. It was great on the Master System because like the Master System just seemed to be capable of doing things that the NES couldn't.
It definitely was.
Not even that it necessarily like controlled better or had like a better frame rate or anything. There was just certain games just worked better on that system, and R-Type was one of them.
Well, to mention frame rate, like, you know, the Sega Master System was capable of having, if I remember correctly, the Sega Master System was capable of having more things on the screen at a time, which was always a problem with shooters on the NES. You know, just being really bogged down by flicker a lot of times when things got out of control. And of course, there's lots of really, not even lots of, but there's definitely instances where they used flicker in really interesting ways. Like, you know, look at that Rekka game. Was it like 92 Rekka or something? Japan only NES shooter. That's just like, wow, that's a pretty interesting technical marvel there. But you know, you think about Sega Master System games, like even Double Dragon, you know,
mm-hmm.
the NES version, you can only have two of the same enemy on the screen at the same time, which of course they got way better come Double Dragon 2, but then the Master System version of Double Dragon, if it had better collision detection, it would have been the easily superior version of Double Dragon.
Right.
But you know, it was, you know, kind of a give and take. But again, it was showcasing what the Master System was better at, which was having, you know, multiple kinds of things happening at the same time. And R-Type running on the Master System was pretty darn solid port.
And pretty close to like, that was one of the first times I remember being like, oh, I don't need to go to the arcade anymore.
Yeah, it was close enough to the arcade one that it was like, well, yeah, this'll do.
This'll do.
Same thing with Shinobi, I would argue. The Master System Shinobi. Version of Shinobi was pretty darn solid. I've never been huge into the Shinobi games. They never had them in the arcade game, in the arcades that I went to as a kid.
Mm-hmm.
So really, you know, most of what I had seen of it was in TV commercials. And actually, my buddy Chris, who had a Master System, he didn't have Shinobi. So really, I didn't get into Shinobi until way, way later. But you know, having played the Master System version, it's a pretty solid conversion of the arcade one, especially the Shuriken mini game.
Yeah, it had everything that you could have wanted from the arcade version. It played really well. It looked great. I've always liked the way the Shinobi games looked.
Yeah.
I like the character design. I'm big into Shinobi. You can read about it in the Kung Fu Fridays from this summer.
You can. I
covered some Shinobi in there as well.
Can, you should.
It's a badass
Shinobi's
game.
One of those things that, one of those brands that Sega should do something with.
Yeah, I loved the PS2 version too. Like that reboot that they made. It was really good. It was really fun.
The Scarf Simulator. Yeah, that was awesome.
Yeah, Scarf Simulator 2000. I'm a big fan.
No, really, that was a badass game. Like that scarf was such a hot, such a good idea.
It was great. And but it definitely felt of this game too, though. Like you go back and play the original Shinobi, you could see the kind of through line to get to that. And it's,
yeah,
I mean, this is a great game. It's got great bosses. It controls really well. The rescue aspect of it is pretty cool. Yeah, I love Shinobi. It's definitely something you should play.
All right. There's two left here. And really, we're talking cream of the crop right here.
Mm-hmm.
One of my absolute all time favorite games in my top 10 favorite games for any console ever. Blaster Master for NES came out in November of 1988 here in America, and holy crow, do I love this game.
That's such a cool game.
It is. It's still, to my eyes and ears, one of the best looking and sounding NES games. The people at Sunsoft were freaking wizards with what they pulled off on the NES. But really, just the art direction of this game is just so well done. It looks so much more detailed than it is, which I think is a really awesome feat to pull off on the NES. Like, they just had lots of little, you know, crumbly dots and stuff all over the place, that weird shading and stuff that made these little sprites that only had like one or two colors look so much more detailed than they were.
They did such an incredible job on this game.
Oh my God, they did. Even the tank itself, like it, the weight of the movement of the tank was so unique. Like nothing else really moved like that. And the way that the wheels animated, like they just, you know, it's a circle with a straight line, but they made sure that there were just the right number of frames to the animation of those wheels spinning around, that it just looked good to move around in that vehicle. But playing a game like this back in 1988, where you're this tank, and then all of a sudden you press select, and your dude jumps out of the tank, and now you can run around as the dude to do all kinds of stuff, including going into doors, and now you're in a top-down action segment where you're going through these mazes, and then the bosses, where the screen just turns black because, you know, you couldn't do these bosses with anything else on the screen. Like,
yeah,
there's your technical limitations. There's your way around the technical limitations. We're just going to do this crazy effect where the room seems to disappear, and now you're fighting in pitch black against some sort of amazing giant creature. And God, beginning to end, this game is freaking stellar. And it's got great. The dumbest story ever.
Yep. Stupid ass story. But man, like, it was so, like, and what's crazy about it is that there has still, to this day, like, Blaster Master is its own thing.
It is.
There is nothing quite like this.
And it wasn't until not last year, but the year before, was to my opinion, the first worthy sequel of Blaster Master was Blaster Master Zero from Enti Creates.
Yeah.
Which had 3DS and Switch. That game is the first Blaster Master sequel that's truly worthy of that name.
Master 2, not great.
Yeah, Blaster had some good ideas. Blaster Master Boy, again. That was a reskinned other game, which I guess you can't really hold that against it, but still not great.
Blasting Again, isn't that the other one?
Blasting Again, I think, was the PlayStation one, which again was a pretty cool game. It was ugly as sin, and it launched as a budget title, but it missed the mark in a lot of ways. It has some really cool music, including a very, very smart take on the, you know, Area 1 theme from Blaster Master, like the most recognizable song from the series. But it just wasn't quite right. I would have loved to see that on modern hardware, because it was just trying to do things the PlayStation 1 couldn't handle. There was Enemy Below on the Game Boy Color, which was kind of like a remix of the NES game, but it didn't feel as good to play. And, you know, the screen was a little bit too zoomed in, so I didn't really care for that one very much. And Blastmaster Overdrive for the Wii, which, again, came really close to being good, but then after you went to, like, the sixth cave that looks just like the other caves, except it's a different color, it's like, okay, you kind of ran out of sauce here. Now I'm just eating dry pasta, and it's nice, it's going to keep me fed, but it's not very tasty. Yeah.
Blaster Master Zero, weird to me still that it has never come out on any other platform.
Yeah, Indie Creates is weird, but it is, I believe, on sale on the Switch right now for pretty cheap, and if you haven't played it and you own a Switch, freaking do it.
Or 3DS.
I still vote Switch on that one over 3DS. Sure. It's got a bunch of like cool DLC characters like Shovel Knight and Shantae.
That's pretty cool.
Which is super cool because, see, I thought those were just going to be like little bullshit skins or whatever, but they weren't. Like, you're Shovel Knight. Mm-hmm. So when you jump out of your tank, you're actually useful. Like, that was the thing. Jason, that was kind of the trade-off. Like, you jump out of your tank as Jason, like, you're very vulnerable. So you can get into other places that you can't get into with your tank, but, you know, it's a risk-reward thing. But man, when you're playing this game, it's like Shovel Knight. Like, you bust out of there and you're just bouncing on the bad guys, and that's how you get from point A to point B. Like, because you're Shovel Knight, or you're whatever the guy's name from Azure Striker Gunvolt is.
Right.
All those DLC characters from other games functioned like they did in their games, except now you're in Blaster Master. So it was just super cool. But the original Blaster Master for NES, I will replay any day of the week. It's a freaking blaster masterpiece. Mm-hmm. Thank you.
On that note,
last game to talk about. Mm-mm-mm. What a delicious game.
I love Bubble Bobble.
Me too. Who doesn't love Bubble Bobble? Bubble Bobble's freaking great.
It is great. It's got adorable little characters.
Mm-hmm.
Super
catchiest
fun little,
music.
Catchy music. Super fun puzzle game. Bubble Bobble's great.
Yeah, it's just like, all right, you spit a bubble, then you pop it, and then it turns into fruit. Move on to the next stage. And it's got tons of stages. It's just the right level of challenge. It's wonderful. I wrote an article, a couple articles the last few weeks for the Stone Age Gamer blog about 8-bit games that didn't get 16-bit evolutions. And this was one of the ones that really stuck out, that it just... This franchise never properly evolved. Bubble Part 2 on NES did a lot of really neat things, but it was a super late game, and there's so few copies of it out there. It's one of the more sought after NES games, and
chances are you haven't played it.
Yeah, and it also committed the cardinal sin of not having 2-player co-op in it.
Right,
why would you do that to a Bubble game? But it also introduced a lot of cool concepts, like, you know, the colored backgrounds and everything, like how much more colorful this world could be with more modern technology and great animations and boss fights. But then there was no proper 16-bit sequel to it. There was a really cool bootleg one that Jeff Wittenhagen, the guy who wrote the Hagen's Alley books and whatnot, he's been on the show before. He pointed out to me that there was a Super Bubble Bobble something for Mega Drive.
Right.
That's like this complete bootleg sequel that has like Doraemon and some other weird anime character. Like, it's totally unlicensed, but it takes a lot of like things from Bubble Bobble 2 and made a pseudo 16-bit sequel out of it. But I would have loved it if Taito really kept evolving this franchise, because there's a lot of fun to be had with Bubble Bobble adventure, action adventure type games. And I'm sad that they never really took this anywhere, because nowadays, anytime there's a new Bubble Bobble game, it's pretty much just a remix of Bubble Bobble, which is nice. Yeah,
but for characters that are so identifiable, you know, like they are still like among some of the most recognizable video game characters. For nothing to have happened with that franchise where it's like, no, this is really like the next great version of this game. I mean, for a game that's been out for 30 years, the best one is still the first one.
I couldn't agree more. The best one is still the first one.
And that's really sad. Because like you said, that there have been a ton of other Bubble Bobble games.
Yeah, but you know, and even the whole Bust Move series, which is Bubble Bobble themed, but it's not actually a Bubble Bobble game. It's just a right. cool puzzle game that's, you know, has the those characters in it. But yeah, there have been a lot of interesting things to be done with the Bubble Bobble franchise, including like the spin-offs like Rainbow Islands, but a real sequel that had a real proper evolution of what that, you know, that take that gameplay and really evolve it. That is not something that has truly happened, and that makes me sad.
And it's super fun to say.
It is. Bubble Bobble.
Bubble Bobble.
Yeah. Good times. Great oldies. Bubble Bobble's great game.
It is.
All right. It's late. We're calling it. That is our show. That was fun. Yeah. Okay. Bye. No, I'm just kidding.
Good night, folks.
I can't come back. I don't know how it works.
I don't know. I already said goodbye.
Bye. All right, join us next week when we will have a return visit, I mean it this time, from author Brett Weiss. He's got a new book on the horizon. We love talking to this guy. We actually got our schedule straight this time. I know day of the week is. Yes, I've double and triple checked with my calendar. I know what day Tuesday is this time.
That's right, it's Blur's Day.
Yeah.
Lousy smarsh weather. That was so funny.
Oh, God. Anyway, that should be a good time. Once again, you can get in touch with us at mail@geekade.com, as well as all flavors of social media that we inhabit. You can like us on Facebook, find us on Instagram at Geekade, subscribe to our YouTube and Twitch channels for all our latest video content, and follow us on Twitter at @_Geekade. You can also find us individually on Twitter. I'm at Geekade Chris, that's Geekade KRIS. And Dan, tell the good people where they can find you.
@GeekadeDan.
If you're interested in any more information about anything we discussed tonight, be sure to check out our show notes. And while you're at it, you can also subscribe to this and any of our other wonderful podcasts on iTunes, Spotify, or Stitcher. Or if you're super nice, you can leave us a review, because any and all feedback is welcome and appreciated. We'd also like to thank our intrepid editor, Evan, for making the show listenable for all you folks. And we'd like to thank Mark, TDK Knight, for our show's theme. You can check him out on SoundCloud and Bandcamp, or his website, which we have a link to in the show notes. Again, always remember to keep your eyes on Geekade.com for even more fresh original content. That is it, everybody. On behalf of Dan and myself, keep playing games.